Welcome to the Being Known podcast with my friend, Dr. Kurt Thompson.
And my friend, Pepper Sweeney.
We are here to discover and explore what it means to be truly known. Hey, Kurt.
Hey, Pep.
It is great to be back with you here today.
Dude.
Getting ready to embark on season 9 here of the podcast.
So good.
And it's just really good to see your face and hear your voice. And
yeah,
I'm excited for today and for this season. Because, as you can see, if you're watching on YouTube right now, we are going to be covering Kurt's latest book this season, The Deepest Place, Suffering and the Formation of Hope. I've been begging Kurt to do a book on joy and happiness so we could have a light moment, but he continues to want to talk about suffering.
We're having a light moment right now.
Yes, we are. And we will have a lot of light moments throughout this season. But I am excited to delve into this work a little bit, Kurt.
Mm-hmm.
The book is fabulous. And I want to, because you probably wouldn't feel comfortable saying this, but I'm going to say this to all of our listeners. Go out and buy the book right now if you don't already have it. You can get it wherever you buy your books. And one of the reasons why I want you to get it now is because we're going to be going through this book chapter by chapter, and it is a great way to these podcasts, as we've done, covered Kurt's previous books, have been a great accompaniment to the book itself, that people have told us that it's helped them to come away with a greater understanding and for the material to impact their lives on a little bit of a deeper level. Mm. And so I want you to go buy the book. And this week, we're just going to be going over the introduction so that by next week, when we delve into chapter 1, you'll be caught up with us and we'll all be in this together.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny. I am really glad to be having the opportunity to walk through it. You think like, oh, really? You're looking forward to walking through suffering? And I think I'm really looking forward to it because it is a way for us to acknowledge what people have known forever, but that we moderns have found, you know, so many different ways of avoiding or hiding from or painting over or pretending. And that is suffering is a real thing, and it happens sooner or later to everybody. In fact, it might even be fair to say that most of us have some part of our life in which we're suffering, but we found some way to kind of papier-mâché over it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we're serious about our lives, if we're serious about following Jesus, we have often said that, you know, at some point, you know, you're going to encounter things that are hard because this is a man who said, you know, if you want to follow me, come and pick up your cross. And not uncommonly, that cross includes, you know, really confronting things about my own life that I'm going to have to allow God to peel off, ways in which I'm, you know, frankly, I'm disobedient, but I'm going to have to learn, as the scriptures tell us, that Jesus learned obedience through suffering. Hmm. You know, you'd think that if he had everything all together, that, you know, somehow he wouldn't have to learn obedience. But he had to learn that, which is kind of hard to get for me personally to get my head around. I didn't think Jesus had to learn anything.
Right.
But we see that there is a willingness on his part to look at his suffering square in the face because he wasn't looking at it by himself. And what we really recognize then is that, as in his story, as is true of all of our stories, that transformation, if we want to be people who are transformed, that work can be excruciating at times. And our stories all begin in different places. But if we're serious about the work of transformation, we will discover that all of our stories eventually end at some point in this place of suffering. And it is through suffering that we are most powerfully transformed. And the people who have been transformed by their suffering have done so because they've developed a relationship with suffering that's actually hospitable.
Hmm.
You know, it's not unique to those folks because everybody suffers if you're a human. But the people who are serious about transformation have kind of postured themselves differently towards suffering. They don't invite it, nor do they reject it, but they learn how to be with it. And it's not uncommon, though, that, you know, when people come into our office and they have symptoms, of all kinds. And for them, their depression, their anxiety, their panic disorder, their alcoholism, so forth and so on, this is what they believe at first glance is what primarily amounts to their suffering. Only we come to discover that these are just the symptoms of a greater suffering that's going on underneath. And so we often say that a great excavation is required, that suffering may at first appear to be on the surface, but its greatest power to undo us lies in the deepest places of our souls where we buried it. And so we have these symptoms as a way, as signals that are inviting us to enter into those places where we are truly suffering, helping us recognize that it's not just the symptoms themselves that are the evidence of the suffering, but the suffering is even in far deeper places. In fact, we often, just to adapt to our pain, we often bury it, and we bury our suffering well beneath the surface of our lives. And so to retrieve it requires that we enter into these deepest places in our souls, hence the title of the book.
You know, it's interesting. Years ago, so I've shared with you some of the stories of my dad and some of the things that he suffered as a child and different things. And when my son was born 26 years ago, my first child, I had written a letter to my dad. This was back before any other forms of communication, you know, so I wrote him a letter. And I had wanted to ask him some questions that I could have information to pass on to my son about my father and about, you know. And so I said, I thought I'd start easy, right? Just knowing my dad and knowing that he wouldn't want to delve in too deeply right away. I think I asked something like, you know, can you name, you know, one good childhood memory or something along those lines? And he called me up when he got the letter and basically said, what are you doing here? I don't want to think about this stuff.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to think about it.
Oh, my goodness.
Why would you want me to go there kind of thing? And I think part of that was generational, you know. But I say this because there was so much suffering that was buried and was like it was like it wasn't there, right? It's like I'm just gonna act like that monster's not in the corner and it'll go away. Right? But the problem is if the monster's in the corner, it's not gonna go away. It's gonna get bigger and bigger and it's gonna come out in every other part of the room, right? And so I have seen firsthand how people in my life have done this very thing where they try to bury the suffering or act like it's just not there or cover it with other things or, you know, all of those things. And I've probably done some of that myself too. But yeah, it's interesting to have you point that out right away as we're getting into this.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, your dad, me, you know, I can think of things in my own life where I'm aware of stories that I have told about myself, wishing I had made different decisions or if I had only done this better, only done that better. And the very act of telling that story that I should have or shouldn't have is a way for me to protect myself against that part of me from when I was, you know, 13 or 15 or whatever, that feels so much grief, so much suffering that I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
And instead I end up coping with it by doing something that's even harder, that's worse, that only compounds the suffering, which means I got to double down even further to keep it in the corner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like this giant avalanching snowball. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, frankly, because, you know, most of us, if I'm going to encounter my suffering, it probably does mean that I'm going to have to, you know, pass through certain remembrances, certain emotional states, whether it's my rage, my anger, whether it's my grief, my resentment,
my fear, my shame.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
And, right? And even despair.
Despair. Yeah.
This felt sense of, I'm going to go visit this thing and I'm going to get there. And I will be no more able to do anything about it now than I felt like I could do about it when I was four or when I was, you know, 14 or when I was 20.
Because it's just as strong now as it was then.
Dude. Yeah. Right. Because this, I mean, this is how the brain tends to work. It houses, it holds, it has these correlated neural structures that hold our memory that are waiting for redemption.
Hmm.
And I only see it as something to be terrified of.
Yeah.
Because I haven't yet had an experience or an encounter with someone who says to me, hey, let's go find your suffering together.
Yeah.
I'm like, no. And you say, no. I mean, this is no small part of, I mean, we've said to our listeners, our listeners have heard you and me and Amy talk about this, about the three of us, the two of us. We've said before that there have been moments in which we have revealed parts of our stories to each other where we are suffering, and we kind of do it with fear and trembling. Because, you know, when you hear this, are you going to leave? Are you going to hear this part of me and you're going to be like, what a whack job? And it has been just the opposite, right? It has been this, it's been transformational because you've been willing to go with me into places where things are just agonizing. And this is Good Friday. This is Jesus coming into all the places where we don't even have the word agony doesn't, you know, it's a placeholder for things that we can't even describe. They're so awful in terms of suffering that he wants to come and be with us. And this thing of him coming, this thing of us coming to each other means that we're naming suffering. And it then, when we do this naming of it, naming all that suffering and all that it encompasses, enables us to enter into this process of forming hope. When all I'm doing, as you said, when all I'm doing is trying not to look at the monster in the corner.
Right.
Dude, I am not very hopeful.
No.
I'm just working really hard, wondering when is the monster going to devour me?
Well, there's the ignoring the monster in the corner, and then there's being so trapped by your suffering and that you feel like you can't see beyond it. Like where would hope be when you're trapped in this suffering, right?
Right. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
So if you walked into my kitchen right now, one of the things that you might notice is on my refrigerator, I have some save the date cards up there. I have some wonderful gatherings and weddings coming up in the summer, all the way out into the fall, and I'm really excited about these things. And just having these save the dates and knowing that I have these great things to look forward to makes my present life even better, just having those things coming up. So I have a gift for you, a save the date. The Center for Being Known is thrilled to announce the Connections Conference 2024 is coming to you October the 24th and the 25th. Now, this is going to be a great opportunity for you to do things like connect with your confessional communities if you're in one. If you're not in one, it'll be a great opportunity for you to join one, as we will be connecting some people there in some confessional communities. You'll also have the opportunity to hear some great speakers, including Sandra McCracken, Dr. Dan Allender, David Bailey, and Jessica Honegger. Of course, Dr. Kurt Thompson will be there. I will be there emceeing. And additionally, we will have a live Being Known podcast recording that is included in this event. You know, listen, we have listened to you. We know that you want some time to breathe at this event. You don't just want to be spoken to the entire time. You want to be interactive and connecting with each other, and we want to make that happen for you. So mark your calendars for October 24th and 25th and join us for an unforgettable experience of learning, growth, and connection at the Connections Conference 2024, themed From Imagination to Incarnation. There's going to be plenty of time for you to meet one another and connect with new friends. Stay tuned for more details and registration information coming soon. But until then, save the date.
And I think one of the beautiful things about as we walk through the text of Romans that we'll get to, that the scripture offers to us, is that we discover that hope isn't a thing then that we have to wonder, is it going to fall into my lap or not? It actually is something that we start to form. We're like, really? I thought hope was a thing that like you would just kind of like happen. We would, I'm hopeful or I'm not hopeful. And the circumstances would be the things that would determine whether or not I am or I am not hopeful. Like, no, as it turns out, hope is a thing that we form, which is really good news because it means we have agency to form hope that is not flimsy. It is hope that is real and that is durable. And, you know, we on this podcast, it's the Being Known podcast, and we you know, come back around to this question of, like, how deeply am I being known in any given day? Am I being more deeply known by God and by others? And what we would say is that in our suffering, to be known in our suffering is the primary feature by which our hope is formed. Because I'm not forming it by myself. I'm forming it collaboratively with others. And what we then find, and we'll talk about this over the course of the book, that we discover that our suffering not only enables us to be redeemed because I'm being more deeply known and loved in my suffering, we discover that the suffering itself is also redeemed.
I'll say that in those moments in my life where I have felt known and loved in my suffering, like those are the God moments for me in my life. Those are the moments where the most tangible presence of Jesus has been that person across from me, or those people in the room who are hearing me and still loving me, you know, knowing me. And reflecting back, and those have been really powerful moments for me, and yeah.
Well, and I think that it's important for us to recognize that when we approach this notion, this experience of suffering, we have to recognize that we all live in a particular world. Our listeners, most of whom are probably in the West, you know, the Western metaphysics has a particular way. It's kind of way of approaching suffering is that it's only and always bad, and we have to do everything we can to just eradicate it. Eastern metaphysics has a different approach. Generally speaking, its approach is to see it as something that is something that my mind is making up, and I'm going to find a way to eventually not pay attention to it that well. Somehow I'm going to like move it to the side, leave it out of my mind. It's something I'm making up. It's not necessarily all that real anyway. But in either case, both Western and Eastern metaphysics, it has us seeing it as something we want to be distanced from. Now, of course, this is a case where nobody's saying that suffering is a good thing. Nobody's saying that suffering is God's idea. What we're saying, though, is that suffering is the naturally expected response of the world that we actually occupy, that God has made, when something this beautiful, our own lives included, when something this beautiful decides it wants to be in charge of its destiny rather than allowing God to be in charge of its destiny. Suffering is the natural consequence. And so, yeah, this is what's going to happen to us. But God doesn't point his finger at us and say, well, you know, that's just tough because, you know, you made your bed, you lie in it. No, the suffering is what it is. I mean, it is the response that we would expect that God has built into the creation to get our attention. And as such, we say that God, it's the Christian story, is the only story that actually honors suffering. In the world we actually occupy, suffering then, it turns out, is necessary for our refinement. You're like, well, we have to be careful because that makes it sound like God's, yeah, you know, God's the one who's coming up with the idea and he's trying to, like, no, but is it, no, in this world that we actually occupy, when we decide that we are going to turn away from God, when we are going to take from the tree the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, And we are the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And we're, instead, we're not going to allow God to just nourish us. We're going to decide what's right and wrong. Eventually, I'm going to pay a price, and that price is suffering. And God is saying, I'm not going to leave you alone with that. I'm going to come for you. Now, this is not what I want to hear, but it's the world that we actually live in. I would much rather hear, I mean, this is things like helicopter and now lawnmower parenting, for instance. We don't want our children to suffer. I don't want my children to have a hard thing. I've come to believe that suffering somehow is an indicator that there's something wrong with the world. It shouldn't be that way. I should somehow be able to do whatever we need to do to, you know, eradicate that. When in fact, no, actually suffering is the far more common experience for a far greater population of the world than we here in the U.S. would typically experience, like in our trip to El Salvador.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, the things that we saw there and the interesting thing, we talked about this a little bit, is the complete reliance of the people that we met, the complete reliance on the church and the complete reliance on God, because they don't have all of the things that we have to pacify or numb the suffering. So there was seeing the faith there in these churches and seeing the community and how they lived and did everything together was really beautiful, and juxtaposed to, you know, here where we're so individualistic and we, you know, we have all of the nice things that we can put before and in front of our suffering so that we can just ignore it a little longer.
Yeah. 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 I think it's important to say too, just to reiterate, none of what we're saying so far makes suffering good. There's no suggestion.
That's really important to say. Yeah. And can you talk for a minute about, you know, I feel like the suffering that we're talking about so far has been mostly sort of an internal kind of suffering and an emotional kind of suffering. Can you talk a little bit about more of a physical type of suffering and how?
Yeah, I mean, I have as a psychiatrist, I'm not primarily treating patients for their medical infirmities. I'm not treating them for their diabetes or for their rheumatoid arthritis or their cardiac disease. But I treat patients who have all of these conditions.
Right.
I've lost more than one patient to cancer. I have lost three brothers to cancer. I have a number of patients who have chronic medical illnesses that put them in positions of continual physical discomfort.
Yeah.
And there is, when we get to the chapter and the episode on suffering itself, when we talk more explicitly about this, we're going to talk about what it means to experience suffering as something that is happening to us.
Yeah.
Something that we can't get away from.
Right.
Can't escape it. And to those who are listening, I want to say to you that there's no, you will hear nothing Pollyanna from Pepper or me in this series regarding your suffering. There's nothing good about it. And at the same time, what we are wanting to draw our attention to and what the text draws our attention to is a bigger, deeper picture that is not inviting us to ignore or to minimize or to dismiss our suffering, but rather actually to invite it to hold its proper place in the light of the redeeming acts of the body of Jesus, in the power of the Holy Spirit, in the context of the scriptures, all these things that Jesus is doing, such that even in our suffering, we are being more deeply formed into the image of the King. We are becoming people of greater love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. I'll never forget when I mentioned I had three brothers who've all passed from cancer, and we're recording here in the first part of January of 2024, and this past December marked the 19th year since his passing. And he lived with pancreatic cancer for 3 years. And this is a man whose life was categorically transformed over the course of his enduring his cancer. And his character was transformed. He became a man of greater fruit of the Spirit. He became a man who, in many beautiful ways, you might say there were some elements that you just I didn't recognize because he was so beautiful. Not as beautiful as you, of course, but he's yeah. Okay, come on. he's so beautiful, yeah. And we. As we got closer to the end, what then it became, you know, near the end of his life, he said, and I think I may have said this here before on our podcast. He said, "I would not ever wish cancer on my worst enemy. It's that awful."
Yeah.
And I can truly say I'm not sorry that it's happened. His relationships with his children, in his marriage, in his friends, you know, certainly with me, were transformed, and as such, my grief when he passed,
yeah,
also was so great because I was losing somebody that was very different than I would have lost had he been killed by a heart attack 3 years earlier. And that's what suffering did. It created and opened a door for him to make different choices about his relationships with his God, with his family, with his friends. And this is what the cross does. This is what Good Friday and Easter do for us. It reminds us that Jesus has come to dwell with us in our suffering in order to transform and transport us into a different space that frequently does not necessarily mean that our suffering itself is mitigated. It often means, and we'll talk about this over the course of our time, it doesn't mean that my rheumatoid arthritis is going to go away.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that my progressing congestive heart failure is somehow going to magically be cleared up. Or that my parents' dementia, you know, the parent who has dementia, you know, we've just, you know, my mother-in-law just passed away within the last month. And, you know, after having a 2-year progressive bout with vascular dementia, and in many respects, she was fairly unaware of things that were happening. And so for many who have parents, loved ones who are suffering from that, it's not even just those with the dementia that are suffering. It's the people who are living with this.
Right.
That are having to figure out how am I to be the older son, be the daughter, the son, the family members, the spouse who are caring for these. There is a suffering that only continues to progressively move in this intensifying direction. And we feel like how am I going to survive this? Well, for all of those who are listening, we want you to know that there is hope. There's hope. And it is durable hope. It is not the hope that we create by our economy. We don't create it because of we don't get it because of Instagram. We don't get it because of my latest weight loss program. I don't get it because my team is going to win, you know, the Super Bowl. That's not why we get it. That's not what makes us hopeful. Hope comes to us most powerfully, most durably in the presence of our deepest suffering. And so encountering our suffering through the lens of Romans chapter 5, verses 1 through 5, in the context of interpersonal neurobiological principles is what we're going to be about. We really want this to be something that will help us live in the real world, not the one I wished that I lived in. You know, I tell people, look, if I were going to read a book on suffering and hope, I would want to read a book that would just tell me, well, you can be hopeful because here's how we're going to like make sure that your suffering is going to be reduced.
Right.
You're going to get rid of it. Like, I'm not looking for a book to tell me how suffering is going to help redeem me or how it's going to be. I'm not really interested in that.
And yet you wrote one.
Yeah.
So I wonder why you write a book that you aren't looking for yourself.
I'm trying to convince myself. I'm working hard.
How's that working for you?
Yeah. Ugh. But we do hope that if we're going to live in the real world, that then this, what we're going to progressively look at is going to help us become more resilient. And in fact, enable us to become agents of healing in the world as a byproduct of our own suffering, which is not something that we often imagine. And we have stories from, as you know, our listeners have heard us talk about confessional communities here on multiple occasions. We have stories from these communities in which people's own suffering, it surprises them when they discover how their suffering has become an open door for the healing of others.
Mm.
And we will talk about that, and we'll encounter that. And that's what we're in for here.
Yeah.
And we're looking forward to it.
Yeah. I'm in. I'm all in. Yeah, I'm looking forward to delving into the book more as the weeks go on. And next week we'll be back with Just Faith, which is the first chapter of Kurt's newest book. And again, that's called The Deepest Place: Suffering and the Formation of Hope. This is what the cover looks like right here if you're on YouTube with us. It's a beautiful cover. And we want you to go out and get the book so that you can fully immerse yourself in this work in the coming weeks. Kurt, thank you so much. This has been a great start to this season 9. And I love you.
And we have an activity.
Oh, yes. We do have an activity. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So for those who are, there are those who might be listening who are like, oh my gosh, like I'm glad to be hearing this because I can name exactly where I suffer. And I want to know what to do about it. And what we'd like for you to do is to, we want, part of this whole journey in this season is about imagining what it means for us to create hospitality for our suffering. And one of the first things that we do is to not just be aware of it, but to name it in ways that make it more visible to me, literally. And so I want to invite you to take some time to write about the places in your life where you suffer. And yes, you have a question.
And you may discover places that you didn't realize, right? Because we don't always pay attention to the areas in our lives where we're suffering because, as we said, we don't want to pay attention to those things.
Right. Well, it's funny that you mentioned that you don't pay. So one of the things that happens often in these confessional communities is, someone will tell some part of their story and you look around the room and everybody's, they're just wide-eyed. And the storyteller is looking at them and asking, why are you responding like that? And they're like, what do you mean? Why are we responding like this? And they, because what they are doing is they are carrying and expressing the affect that the storyteller doesn't have access to in their own life.
Yeah.
The storyteller themselves doesn't have access to their own suffering in ways that other people in the room suddenly do.
Right.
That's and wild. So, yeah, go ahead.
No, it's just that thought of that, the words come out of your mouth and you not even realizing what the story that you're telling and the power of the story that you're telling. And then the others in the room point that out to you, and it impacts them, which impacts you. It's a whole,
yeah. And so one way to kind of add to that would be to consider, if you have a trusted friend, to ask them, is there anything in my life that you are aware of where you might imagine that I'm, where would you say that you think I suffer? A way for us to invite our friends into that conversation. And if I can't, if we're in a space right now where you look around your life and you're thinking like, I don't really know. I don't know if there's a place where, an honest assessment would say, I don't know that I feel like I suffer really in play. I mean, there are some places that might be a little difficult here and there, but like suffering, I don't know that I would call it that. Then one option would be to consider, is there anything? And if so, what might those be? What are those things that we might use to distract ourselves from our suffering that helps me keep it at bay? That's something to consider. So again, we're just kind of in the foothills of this. And then be able to name, what is it that you're aware of that you do in response to your suffering? if you can name your suffering, what is it that you know? What are the things that you do with your actions, with your body, with your thoughts, with your, you know, how am I responding to this? Am I responding to my suffering by holding a grudge? Am I responding to my suffering by just, you know, gritting my teeth and white knuckling it? What am I doing with all the things that I feel that emerge in the face of my suffering? And to what degree do any of those actions include the presence of other people? It's going to be a crucial element of what we're going to talk about as we go forward. So those are some things that you can think about, write about, reflect on. And we would love for you to, if as you begin to enter into that reflection, we would love for you to write to us, love for you to let us know what you're discovering, love for you to know if there are questions that you have. You know, we might have we typically at the end of these seasons have a time of exploring questions. And along the way, you know, keep your questions at hand and send them in to us so that we can collect them. And we look forward to ongoing time with you in this
season. We'll make sure that we have a way for you to connect, because I can't think of the email address right now. We'll make sure we have that in the show notes for you. Yeah. And we'll have that. Amy will probably have it in the post show here and in just a few minutes also, if you're with us on YouTube. So stick around for that. Kurt, thanks.
Right,
I'm excited
Love
about
you.
This season. Love you.
All right.
Bye.
Till next time. All right.
This podcast is produced by Kurt Thompson, Pepper Sweeney, and myself, Amy Chella. Audio production and editing is by Keaton Simons. Video production and editing is by Mark Gould. Speaking of videos, each week we post the video version of every episode to our YouTube channel. You can find us on YouTube by going to youtube.com or your app and searching Being Known Podcast. If you'd like to connect with us, you can find us on social media at Being Known Pod. If you like this podcast, tell a friend. Tell all of your friends. And please like, rate, and review. Be well, be known.